Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, May 21st, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or in the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered in the many years of doing therapy and living life. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And that's a tool I've been using to great advantage in my life for more than 16 years to improve the quality of my life, my relationships, manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotion I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us is gifted with. And you can actually download the tool itself absolutely free. It's a PDF file. Click on it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that tool, and they serve as a tutorial for using that tool. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, because that usually stimulates questions and comments. And that's one of the primary reasons we're here 5 days a week, 2 hours a day in our current format. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I will announce you by your area code. We're doing the Course in Miracles lessons this year, and today is the 141st day of this year, and that brings us into a new review section. And the introduction to the review has the following commentary. Now we review again, this time aware we are preparing for the second part of learning how the truth can be applied. Today we will begin to concentrate on readiness for what will follow next. Such is our aim in this review and for the following lessons. Thus we review the recent lessons and their central thoughts in such a way as will facilitate the readiness that we would now achieve. There is a central theme that unifies each step in the review that we undertake. That central theme can simply be stated with these words. My mind holds only what I think with God. I read that and I remembered the very strong message from The Impersonal Life by Joseph S. Benner. In one part of that teaching, he says, the human mind has done no actual thinking until after that mind awakens to the presence of the divine within it. So we have a lot of associations and we have a lot of resonated activities and response patterns, stimulus and response and automatic thoughts trained into us. But what that teaching was trying to say is that actual thought, creative thought, doesn't happen until after the human being wakes up and realizes he's not just a blob of protoplasm, that there's a divine mind present in the field of mind, or that his mind is within the field of the divine mind. And once someone has awakened to that truth, that's when actual thought begins for the first time. That's what this reminds me of. My mind holds only what I think with the Creator. The commentary goes on to say, that is a fact and represents the truth of what you are and what your Creator is. It is this thought by which creation gave life to the offspring of creation, establishing the offspring as co-creator. It is this thought that fully guarantees salvation to the offspring of creation. For in his mind, no thoughts can dwell but those that creation shares. Lack of forgiveness blocks this awareness, yet it remains forever true. Let us begin our preparation with some understanding of the many forms in which the lack of true forgiveness might be carefully concealed. Because they are illusions, they are not perceived to be what they are. Defenses that protect your unforgiving thoughts from being seen and recognized. So, what are some of the many forms that the lack of true forgiveness gets concealed by? If I live in the idea that I'm separate from my Creator, that's one of those thoughts. The things that conceal the lack of true forgiveness have the purpose of showing me something else, and they hold correction off. They hold me away from having this correction of perception through self-deceptions. And yet, in truth, your mind only holds what you think with all of creation, with the one mind, with the connection to the Creator, God, light, love, spirit, whatever you want to call it. Your self-deceptions do not take the place of truth, no more than a child who throws a stick into the ocean can change the coming and going of the tides, the warming of the water by the sun, the silver of the moon on it by night. So do we start each practice period in this review with readying our minds to understand the lessons that we read and see the meaning that they offer us. So the truth is true whether I hold an illusion about it or not. I don't get to change the truth. I can pretend. And, you know, a lot of great teachings tell us that the vast majority of my emotional and psychological pain is derived from the process of trying to believe that what's true is not true, pretending that what's true is not true, or pretending something that is clearly false might one day be true. And so I can create a lot of mental and emotional and even physical pain and drama by trying to pretend that I am not one with the Creator and that I don't share that one mind and that these illusions I have are real and true. This is why so much of the Michael Rice's work, every worksheet has on it, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to make up another story out of this content in my mind that my fear and hostility-based reality is true. So it says, begin each day with time devoted to the preparation of your mind to learn what each idea you will review that day can offer you in freedom and in peace. Open your mind and clear it of all thoughts that you would deceive, that would deceive, and let this thought alone engage your mind fully. My mind holds only what I think with God, with creation, with the oneness of all. 5 minutes with this thought will be enough to set the day along the lines which the Creator has appointed and to place the one mind in charge of all the thoughts you will receive that day. They will not come from you alone, for they will all be shared with the Creator. And so each one will bring the message of the creation's love to you, returning messages of your love to creation. So will communion with the Lord of hosts be yours, as he himself has willed it will be. And as his own completion joins with him, so will he join with you who are complete as you unite with him, as you unite with all creation and all creation unites with you in awareness of the singularity. After your preparation, merely read each of the two assigned lessons for the day, and then close your eyes and say them slowly to yourself. There is no hurry now, for you are using time for its intended purpose. Let each word shine with the meaning God, the Creator, has given it, as it was given to you through this voice. Let each idea, which you review that day, give you the gift that has been laid in it for you. And we will use no format for our practicing but this. Each hour of the day, bring to your mind the thought with which the day began and spend a quiet moment with it. Then repeat the two ideas that you practice for the day slowly, patiently, and with enough time to see the gifts that they contain for you. Let them be received where they were meant to be. We add no other thoughts, but let these be the messages that they are. We need no more than this to give us happiness and rest and endless quiet, perfect certainty, and all that the Creator wills that we receive as the inheritance that we have of creation. Each day of practicing, as we review, as we close, we began. We close as we began, repeating the first thought that made that day a special time of blessing and happiness for us. And through our faithfulness, we are restored to the world from darkness to the light, from grief to joy, from pain to peace, from sin to wholeness. God, creation, offers thanks to you who practice thus keeping of creation's word. As we give you your mind to the ideas for the day, again before you sleep, his gratitude surrounds you in the peace wherein he wills you be forever, and are learning now to claim that peace as your inheritance. So today's thoughts to be slowly considered are, as my mind holds only what I think with God, forgiveness is the key to happiness, And forgiveness offers everything that I want. Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles, titles this review as Boom. She quotes Mary Carr as saying, God wants us to put this stuff down now. He wants us to wear the world like a loose garment and be of good cheer. Pam writes, okay, sports fans, it's time for another review. Lessons 141 through 150 reinforce previous lessons, encouraging us to clear all thoughts of self-deception. Only love is real. Begin each day of the 10 days with the above mantra. This sets the stage for an extraordinarily epic day. Then simply repeat the two lessons, the need to knows, for each lesson. 5 minutes in the morning and another 5 minutes at night. Again, may I remind you, it takes longer to listen to Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. This is an incredible bargain for a priceless gift. The only other ask during the 10 days, the next 10 days, is anytime your ego starts in on an alternate reality, something like, this is so unfair, that person's asking for it, etc., simply stop, recognize it's a red herring, bop it on the head with your mantra, only love is real. Oh, and your selection from the jukebox, Love Is All Around by the Troggs. Her lesson 141, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. She quotes Charles Einstein, who said, the foundation for knowledge is, quote, I don't know, close quotes. Pam writes, only love is real. Forgiveness is the key to happiness. Forgiveness offers everything I want. Pam then writes, forgiveness is not about letting old so-and-so off the hook. It's a get-out-of-jail-free card offering instant release from the world of illusion. Let me guess, there's probably a corner somewhere in your house of illusions with beliefs about your body, how it operates, what it needs, what it's capable of. The dusty basement in your illusions is cluttered with beliefs from your culture, beliefs about what is socially acceptable, ideas about your gender, your race, your need to be liked. And if your family is anything like my family, it probably left a few boxes to trip over as well. So today I remember all illusions are subterfuge, and I will consciously apply my trusty get-out-of-jail-free card. Forgiveness, like Batman's Batmobile, Popeye's spinach, and Superman's phone booth, forgiveness works every time. So today, forgiveness is the key to happiness, and forgiveness offers everything I want. So we have 41 minutes left. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? We had a support group last night, and in the support group we were listening to an hour discussion between Gabor Maté and Adia Santi, Shanti, and yours truly had this eruption of, you know, gut-wrenching, sick-to-my-stomach feeling come up at one point, and I announced to the people after we finished listening that I have some worksheets I'll have to be doing this weekend to process through some of that negative energy that was sitting somewhere in me, hiding somewhere where it hasn't been, I haven't been consciously aware of it for a good long while. But what we know with this work is that there was nothing about the discussion between these two lovely people. One, a physician who spent a lot of time talking to people about trauma and the effects of trauma and resolution of trauma. And the other, a spiritual teacher who's been devoting himself to spiritual teachings ever since he was 19 years old, who's written, I don't know, 10 books or so and is internationally recognized. So these people are having this lovely conversation, and something in what I choose as an interpretation for some of those words resonated literal nausea and a sick feeling and tightness in my stomach. And what we know from this work is that's got nothing to do with what they were talking about. It has to do with energies and beliefs that I carried with me into that support group situation last night. And if I want to blame myself or somebody else or the words I heard or the images I saw on the screen for what I was feeling, I basically build a prison for myself. I ensure that I will not have resolution, that I will be giving myself rationalizations and permission to live another day, another week, another decade or five with that disruptive energy within me. I cannot find resolution by arguing about what was said or contacting these people and telling them they were wrong. That will never change the nausea feeling. That will never change the tightness, the judgment, the constriction that was in me last night soon after I interpreted and began to respond to what they were saying. So fortunately, we know we've got the tools. We've got the reality management worksheet. I've got the EFT tapping. I did a couple rounds of tapping before I went to bed last night because it was so late I did not make the time to do the worksheets on it. And it's such a clear set of issues for me. I remember it so well that I will have ease this weekend doing some worksheets on it and clearing it up at deeper levels. I've had two different people in my office already this morning, and one of them is in his mid-20s and continuously says, that upset me. They upset me. This is upsetting to me. And I pulled out this example to say, okay, here's a situation last night where I felt upset. And the difference is I know, I don't yet know how, but I know that's an inside job. It's an internal creation. And I have the ability, because I have been introduced to these tools and this awareness of how my mind-body energy system creates its emotions, I've got the ability now to make a change in that. If he continues to say, that upset me, they upset me, this is bad, this is wrong, this is why I'm angry, this is why I'm sad, this is why I'm scared, this is why I'm disgusted, he will stay imprisoned in that belief system. And that's one of the great benefits of having access to these tools and being able to teach it, is that here in his mid-20s, I'm able to introduce him to a set of concepts that he can start observing for himself and a set of tools that he can apply directly in his own life to liberate himself from the false belief that he's a victim here, that he's only upset because this person or that person, etc. So comments, questions, answers, soliloquies. We have 34 minutes left. We're on a Friday. Plenty of time for several conversations and or one good long one. How can we support you today? Is anything I'm saying make sense? Does anybody have specific questions about how I could get so triggered listening to a spiritual teacher, an internationally known spiritual teacher, and an internationally known physician that works with trauma resolution? Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1. Ask your question. Make a statement. Suggest a topic. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Boy, you set up a fodder for a tremendous discussion. And I appreciate that you're using yourself again as an example, because it makes it so immediate. You had this response, and there was a specific trigger that unearthed some probably old stuff. I was having a discussion with my son yesterday, and he said, what is it that on one morning I'll wake up fine, looking forward to work, feeling good, and another morning I'll wake up and it's just as if I'm under attack from what you called nauseating, he said, just terrible anxiety and darkness and sense of doom. One day is no different from another. There's nothing in my mind or in anything that I know about my life that would trigger such a bad
upset.
Time, but he's upset. Yeah, he says, but 2, 3, 4 mornings a week, I go through this, and I just throw myself out of bed and go through my ablutions and get to the office and breathe and distract myself with what I'm supposed to do with patients. And around 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, if it's a really bad day, it might be 3 o'clock before I'm feeling normal again. And then I feel normal and I realize I like my work. I like my life. What is this? And honest to God, I have said to him so many times, well, there are these tools. But he's doing the Course in Miracles lessons, however much he's doing them. Every morning I send the lesson to him and to my oldest grandson who wants them too. And often my son will write back and say, great lesson, I really needed that. And he says when he's reading the lessons in the morning, he feels as if there is something just inherent in the appearance of the email that is soothing to him, that provides some kind of comfort and relief while he reads it. So he's got that. But I tell you, I'm at a complete loss, partly because I'm his mother, I suppose, partly because I'm very aware of going into fix-it mode and making all these suggestions. So I don't do anything. I just listen and I say, gosh, that sounds so painful. Sorry, I got a meowing cat here too. So yours is maybe an old issue, but it was triggered by some specific thing. Whereas with my son, it feels as if there's no specific thing, but I suppose there is.
Okay, so look at it this way.
Yeah.
Right now, you know, when we're saying I'm here and I'm aware of this,
mm-hmm.
This is because and only because I'm doing basically what, you know, Adi Ashanti is doing starting a few decades later in life. But that is focusing a tremendous amount of my waking conscious energy on increasing my awareness.
Mm-hmm.
right? Studying the various teachers, learning different tools, applying those tools to me, paying people or trading, work with other people that use these tools. And so I'm building the skills in this area much the same way your son is building the skills in the area of physical medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So just like, you know, I know almost nothing about what it takes to be good at what your son does. I wouldn't expect him to know much of anything about what it is that is causing his upset, or what tools he might use to start seeing and dismantling his upset, because he's not devoting the time and energy to it that I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But this is, you know, this is one of those questions that was coming up in the discussion last night, not one that was triggering for me, but one of the questions that was there in the early part of the discussion between Gabor and Adyashanti is it possible for anyone to learn these spiritual tools and to have these deeper spiritual experiences? Because a lot of people are nowhere near as sensitive. A lot of people haven't had spiritual awakenings beginning at 18 and 19 years old, or some people, you know, 8 years old. And some people just seem to be, you know, the opening story was that Adyashanti was driving from Germany to Switzerland, or Switzerland to Germany, and there was this, he was in a car full of people, and he had this shockwave of sensation. And he said to people in the car, did anybody else just feel that? And several people said, yes. And one of them said, that's because we just crossed the border. And he said, he looked in the rearview mirror, and he saw the sign saying, you know, there's the border. And so that was that, you know, very high sensitivity to the energy of one country to another, the culture, the mindset, the history of abuse through Germany, et cetera, the history of passivity in Switzerland, et cetera. So now Gabor is sitting there saying, you know, when I hear a story like that, I think it's hopeless for me. I would never feel anything like that. I'm like a rock compared to you. You're so much more sensitive to that. And Adyashanti said, look, that's how I feel compared to my wife, right? She is so much more sensitive to these things than I am. And so the question is, can somebody learn to have that level of sensitivity? Or can somebody improve their sensitivity and bring themselves to the point where they can have those spiritual awakenings or experiences? Well, in some at some level, there's a Adyashanti was saying, many people come to his seminars and say, I'm like a rock, I'm insensitive, I don't get any of this, I'm not going to. But after they've been at one of the seminars or week-long retreats, they end up having a very different experience. So his experience is that many people can get the skills developed and the sensitivities or the awareness of their own sensitivities increased. But he doesn't go so far as to say anybody can do it. And he doesn't go so far as to say as for some people there's no chance. So with someone like your son, where he wakes up 2 or 3 days a week and he's got this horrible sensation, the best guess is that if he would devote himself to the tools, he could discover and dismantle much of that. All of it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how much is there. I don't know how much he's dedicated to it. I don't know if that's part of his path. But the fact of the matter is, it's probably going to stay blocked to him until he starts actively using the tools.
Mm-hmm.
So if he, you know, if he gets up one day and he's got that feeling, rather than his usual routine, if he went into the use of some tools or making notes and doing journaling about, okay, what kinds of things were going on in the day yesterday, and what kinds of thoughts did he have when he was going to bed last night, and what memories does he have of any dreams, just making some notes in that, rather than his usual routine of prayer or meditation, mm-hmm. so that he's adding mm-hmm. to it this, he's, you know, the way I think about it for myself is that I'm bookmarking that in my mind to come back and do some work on it. Mm-hmm. He might get some revelations there in that morning, or he might just, you know, as I just said, create a bookmark for him to come back after work or later that day or the next weekend and go do some, you know, like psychological review and autopsy of the moment and say, okay, you know, let me just do some worksheets around these issues and see if that shifts or brings some insight. So that's my response to that, right? It isn't too surprising that I would be in this support group last night watching this video and feel that like gut punch, sick to my stomach feeling, and have some clear insights about this is my stuff. I've got a hunch where I can start the worksheets. That's not too surprising because I study this stuff the way your son studies medicine.
Mm-hmm. Well, this gets into a lot of thoughts which really don't have much to do with the radio show, because it looks as if my son's not going to do that work. It's partly because he doesn't think it's going to help. He doesn't trust tools, even though I bear witness a lot. He'll say, "How are you doing?" And I'll say, "I'm great." Most days I am in good shape. And he says, "Wow, that's amazing." But, and I say, well, you know,
Let me just stop you right there. There is no but.
Okay.
And that's the most you can do for him.
Yeah.
If you just keep doing your work, if you actually do the work and do the walk rather than talking about it,
yeah.
This basically leads to the, so if you get yourself all wrought up and anxious and fearful and sad, and you blame that on your observation that your son won't use the tools or he stays racked in these negative emotions, then you're mm-hmm. not doing the actual work. Right?
I understand.
You're talking about the work. You're talking about the work, but you're not actually doing it. That
yep.
was part of what was triggering for me last night. So Gabor Mate was talking about several spiritual teachers who had been very high up in the Buddhist tradition and had schools in America and all this, and they sexually abused their followers and people in their community.
Mm.
And to the point where they had to be relieved of the, you know, the duty, or it came out after their death, and then the person that they appointed to follow up their work, that person started molesting people, et cetera. And there have been big news stories about this. This isn't a revelation to
right.
me when Gabor was talking about this. I've known of these things over the years. I've heard about them. And as I heard about these teachers sexually abusing people in their community or their students, I felt this gut-wrenching, you know, sick feeling in my stomach. I let the conversation go. I had the urge to just, you know, turn it off right away and jump in and talk about how that's wrong, et cetera. But I let them go, and I let Gabor talk about it, and I let Adyashanti respond. And when I felt like he had given a solid response, that's when we're at about the hour mark anyway, I cut it off, and then I started trying to talk to the people in the group about the strong reaction that I had,
mm-hmm.
and the observation, how we can observe the utility of matching my words and my actions. Because Gabor kept asking the question, how good a teacher could these people actually be if they're saying one thing and doing another?
Mm.
And, you know, the opinion from their followers is that they were great teachers of the Dharma, but they're human, right? Well, the essence of the questioning that was coming from Gabor is, were they really very good teachers if they were doing these behaviors? And what I wanted to point out to the people in the group, because I have the observation that most of the people that attend these support groups, in one way or another, they end up being teachers of this work.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to point out that without needing to get angry and be in judgment and go on a crusade to out all of these people, I can discern that when I say one thing and do another, I'm teaching what I'm doing. I'm not teaching what I'm saying. And the Way of Mastery says it over and over again. Teach only love, for that is what you are. Act
mm-hmm.
in the way that expresses your awareness of your true nature, because that's what you teach. You don't
mm-hmm.
teach with what you say. You teach
right.
with what you do. So back to you and your son. When you have this upset and then you say, but, there's no but, just do your work. If he keeps asking you, how are you doing? And you go from saying, most days I'm really good, to I'm really good all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
that's a true statement. That is the best thing you can do energetically for your son because of the bloodline and that energy, and it's the best thing you can do because we teach by role modeling far
well,
more than we teach by lecturing.
Okay. Hang on, Dr. Tim. There's a workman just come in the door. I'm on a call. Do you need me right now?
Well, I'm done.
You're done. Okay. Dr. Tim, I'm going to get off the phone. I'll call back in
right.
in a few minutes. Okay?
All right.
Okay. Sorry.
Area code 406. You're in the air.
Oh, hi, it's Lisa.
Well, hello, Lisa, who used to be in the chat room.
Well, so when you started speaking about, actually, I don't remember what my trigger was, but so I had an incident with just this hopeless, helpless indignation watching the police cam video of the dragging and murder of Ronald Green in Louisiana. And similar to the teacher story that you were just telling, you know, about the sexual abuse, these police officers hog-tying and, you know, this man is begging for his life. He says, I'm scared. And I started bawling. Now, I've watched much, you know, many of the videos of police officers beating people, but this one, for some reason, I was bawling. And the thought of it is triggering tears for me now. And I kind of, I guess I could do my regular, you know, hopeless, helpless, sadness, you know, righteous indignation worksheets, but I thought maybe I would give I'd ask for support in maybe seeing something else that I'm not seeing?
Well, the first thing that comes to me in situations like this is Michael's codependence to interdependence worksheet and the adaptations of that that I have for the EFT tapping. So
mm-hmm.
if I understand that I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing, then I can take
mm-hmm.
a step back and say, okay, what? How would I describe what these police are doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just start with words like, well, they're being brutal, or they're being abusive, or they're being murderous, or whatever. They're being whatever the qualities or aspects of this behavior are. And when I find the one that's resonating my tears, you said you're crying, you're bawling your eyes out. When you
yes.
stumble across it, that emotion will get stronger, or your anger at the dynamic will get stronger. And then you can stop and say, okay, when in the recent or distant past have I exhibited that trait or behavior and I'm still judging myself negatively for it?
So good.
And when that
okay.
comes up, that's what I target my worksheets on. So, for instance, I'll give you the for instance from last night. And I haven't done the worksheet, so I don't know exactly where it's going to go. But last in the group, right, now I'm supposed to be some kind of a teacher in this support group. And I've got these people on the call. And I've had all kinds of other people on the call over the years. And I get this sick feeling in my stomach when I hear about a teacher who has sexually molested people in his community or his students. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. I just had a lot of noise on the line. So I immediately took a breath, turned the focus inside, stopped myself from, turning off the video and letting it go. And I just turned the focus inside and asked, okay, what is it in me that I'm, still judging myself negatively for? And I flashed on a situation from when I was in, freshman year of high school. And there was a family that lived in the neighborhood, and the son was a friend of mine, and he had a younger sister who was, everybody said, just beautiful and all that. And so there was a story about somebody doing the peeping Tom routine, trying to see through the window into her bedroom or when she was taking a shower. And I had the thought at that time, wow, I would love to see that, right? Without any regard for how that might be abusive to her.
Right.
And that was the first thing that popped into my head last night. And I made an earmark for that. I need to do some worksheets around that. There's a beginning point that when that memory flashed into my awareness, I don't want to just blow it off and say, oh, that's irrelevant. Oh, I didn't do anything. I didn't, peek at her window or whatever. As I start doing those worksheets, there's a lot of noise on the line.
Huh.
Can you hear me?
I can. And on the radio, well, at least I'm not hearing it, but let me
good.
Move.
As long as you can hear me, it was loud enough. I thought I'd lost you. So that's
okay.
It. That's where I would start you. If you go to the actual traits or behaviors and start listing them, when you find the one that's really rocking you core and making, triggering this deep upset, then ask yourself, when in the recent or distant past have I done that I'm still judging myself for? And then there's the target for the worksheets or the journaling.
That's
or the
really
breath
good.
Work or the
well,
tapping.
And I've definitely had, I have clear memories of at nine, knowing where the shotgun was, and if Dad came home one more time drunk and, you know, was sexually assaulting my mom and throwing her and beating her and turning over our house, I was going to kill him. I absolutely was. And I remember, I have a clear memory of a feeling coming over me and it me realizing that it wasn't my job. But I was set. I knew where it was.
Yep.
I was going to do it. Yep.
And you'd probably visualized yourself doing it.
I don't think I didn't do the, I got to the weapon and had, but I don't have the visual of pulling the trigger. But then when I was in the Army, you know, I did lots of practice on pulling triggers and stuff. So, but, well, thank you for that. Yeah, that's really good. And that's more, what word am I looking for? More targeted. It's because I oftentimes am not certain, so I just do, you know, my helpless, my general that I can go to. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're quite welcome and deserving. It is the one of the better applications of the codependence to interdependence worksheet dynamic. It's helped a lot of people over the years either be the focus for their worksheets or their EFT tapping and reaching clarity, because the truth of it is, as I say in one of my bottom line observations, I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for having done the same or similar thing. It's all an inside job. And when I am upset and I recognize that dynamic, I can use it as the roadmap. As Michael says, when I start canceling the goals I have, when I recognize that when I'm upset, it's because I'm pouring mental, emotional energy into a thought, and that's creating the emotion, that thought is always going to contain a goal that's not getting met. And when I cancel that specific goal, as Michael talks about in some of his lectures, it opens, it serves like a keyway. It's directly vibrationally related to the trauma that I need to see that's actually creating the upset. It's all an inside job, and the roadmap to sorting it out is right here inside me. It's contained in the thought process and the rationalizations and the clinging to being right, etc.
Yes. And, you know, over the years, I've had very violent responses to situations. And if, you know, and even if it wasn't acted out, certainly, well, I should punch him in the face or I should grab him by the neck or, you know, something. So there's always, even if it wasn't acted out, there's been plenty of fantasies, if you will. So thank you so much. That's really good. I appreciate it.
You're entirely welcome and deserving, and good luck with those worksheets.
Thanks. Oh, boy. And by the way, my mom's coming to town tomorrow, too, so here we go.
Oh, buckle up.
So, yeah. Deep breath.
How long is she going to be around?
For till Monday morning. So we have this beautiful new home, and my son, who I haven't seen in 10 years, is graduating, who lives 9 miles away. And so my mom is coming to town to go to his graduation, and I'm not invited. So it's going to be a weekend fraught with a triggering moments for me that I'm willing to do my work and clear.
All right. Well, bless your heart and good luck with all of that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so, you know, the former husband stuff is real challenging, and you know, it's all a good invitation to do my work.
Yep, those periods in life sometimes come fast and furiously. So it sounds like you'll have a rather intensive period coming up here. So.
Yes. Stay
the
and I'm
course.
Not doing raw food. I'm not doing raw food. I'll let you know that.
Okay. All right. Well, I wish you well.
Thank you. Yep. All right.
All right. Blessings. So our call-in number for the second hour is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, you can get access to Michael and Jeannie, and they'll be here in just a few minutes. They'd love to have your comments or questions. It makes the intention to be of service far easier to live into. So when you can call with a comment or a question, makes life easier for those who are trying to support you. Let us know, let them know what's on your mind, what would be a good topic for them to explore or questions you have. We're coming up on the weekend, and I'll just say that we're still inviting people to come up with an idea for someone that you would like me to read their book and or interview them. I have two interviews coming up this next week, one with Diedrich Wolsack and one with Dr. Andrew Pleaner, who is a functional medicine psychiatrist. So if you have any ideas like that, books you've read, spiritual teachers you'd like us to interview either for Mind Shifters Radio or Journey's Dream On Your Mind podcast, send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org or give us a call at 563-999-3581. And press 1 and just speak your suggestion. And I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love. And everything else is false. And I hope you have a lovely weekend and a lovely second half of the show with Michael and Jeannie. Welcome,
thank
Jeannie
you.
Rice.
Thanks. I hope you have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too. Have a great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, May the 21st, 2021, and Michael is en route to Lexington, Kentucky, and so I have a recording that I am going to, it's actually lesson 7 or a portion of it. I had to cut it down so it'd be less than an hour from the 48-tape series of Stepping Beyond. And so this is lesson 7. So enjoy. It's called Doing Your Work.
If you look at the function of sleep, especially the deep level delta sleep, that seems to be the place where regeneration takes place. If you're not toxifying the body, it seems logical that there doesn't have to be that much regeneration because there aren't that many cells being killed off. We're talking about diet, we're talking about emotions, we're talking about thoughts, we're talking about ideas, the things that we integrate into the field. I know that I've personally gone from times when I've been doing heavy-duty detoxification and clearing myself out, and I've needed 10, 11, 12 hours sleep at times. And then I've had other times where an hour and a half sleep a night, any other 22 and a half hours I can go, just go and do whatever I want to do. I've had that happen for a period of months where I've been able to do that. So I know that can be achieved, and I've not achieved it yet. I have in short time frames. But then it seems like you get into another level, you bring up another layer, and you go back into where you need the regeneration. But I think that ultimately, if we can totally clear ourselves out, yes, I think we can get to the point where we need next to no sleep. And also, I think that you can make sleep very functional time for you. It can be important time. You can, you know, set yourself to be aware of what's going on in your sleep. The fact is there's a part of you that never sleeps, the soul, and And as you more and more shift your awareness into the soul level, away from just the mind, it's the body that sleeps, it's the conscious mind level that we sink down below, we can be conscious on the soul level of what's happening. And you can be learning and doing all sorts of things while you're sleeping too. Well, I personally feel that that sleep should be much like food. If you're not ready for it, don't do it. Okay? Eating by the clock, sleeping by the clock is not the most productive way to run a body. It serves society well, but it doesn't run a body well. Yeah, one of the things that I suggest is question everything that you hear everywhere, including here. You know, don't believe a word you hear in this classroom any more than you believe anything here anywhere else, because none of it's true. Okay? None of what we're saying here is true. It's a stepping stone to the truth, which you will experience, but you won't hear it in words. So if you hear it in words, discount it. Use it as a place to step. Okay? I can say from personal experience that although I have almost all my life needed a fair amount of sleep, I have had periods where over 2 to 3 months, an hour and a half to 2 hours a night was all I needed, and I could go at full steam with full mental alertness the other 22 hours, 23 hours. Okay, so I know that that can be done, and I haven't done it fully yet. I've gone through varying stages of it. It used to be any less than 8, and I couldn't function properly. It's now to the point where maybe my average is about 5, okay, with lesser periods. But, yeah, question it all. That's one of the things we're here to do, question. Prove all things for yourself. Just accepting it. Even if it's my experience, just accepting it isn't going to get you anywhere. Saying, wow, isn't that nice, isn't going to get you anywhere. The whole objective is to get to the point where you have the experience. A question that came up last night in the class in Lauderdale was this thing about building brain cells, and it seemed appropriate to get into that topic because it really fits at the growth and development stage of how our brain cells build, and what does that mean? So what? Because that's really the key to what's happening in this class, is the building of brain cells. The real functioning of it happens out there in life, but it's the building process. And if we look at how brain cells function and how brain cells are built, it's of key importance to realize that anything that you can retrieve from brain cells, you can retrieve because at some time in the past, you experienced it. Okay, we have these, and when I say brain cells, I'm not locking them into or locating them strictly in the physical brain. I'm talking about the whole body. The whole body is an information storage system. And if information comes in through any one of the 5 senses, okay, we've got 5 antennae. Information comes in through any one of the 5 senses, whether it's sight, sound, taste, or whatever it is, it's a vibration. We know that in order for us to hear it, it has to be in a certain frequency range. The dog whistle, we don't hear, but the dog does. His antenna operates in a different frequency range. Whatever frequency comes in, it's impregnated on a brain cell. And whatever meaning is given to that, a file is set up, and when that's stimulated in the future, that is, that similar vibration appears again, the information in that brain cell takes on some of the energy from this external situation and brings that brain cell. It's like turning the volume up. Here we talked before about the idea of resonance, the exchange of energies. An opera singer, she's got a glass, she sings. She can sing for the next 3 days and not disturb the glass, right? Until what? Until she hits just the right frequency. She's literally got to take her voice to the point where it matches the atomic magnetic structure of the glass. When it does, the energy from her voice is taken on by the glass. It starts to vibrate abnormally and shatters because the glass can't handle it. In precisely the same way, this resonates what was impressed previously. If there was good, bad, or indifferent in the experience the first time you had it, then you resonate, the energy from this transfers to this, turns up the volume, and you become aware of good, bad, or indifferent. notice that if you're stuck as a soul, if you're stuck in the meaning that the mind gives it, you may not experience the real event externally. As spiritual beings through this body-mind unit, and as long as we're limited to the body-mind unit, we experience what brain cells give us in the way of content, context, and meaning. And that's always past. Now, if I brought out a new article, let's say I brought an article that you've never seen before, and I hold it up, and there it is, and you all see it. One of your receivers has received that vibration, and they're going to be brain cells impregnated with that piece of information. Now, if I don't do anything but hold it up, I don't say what it is, I don't talk about it, I just hold it up, and then I go on with the rest of the class, you're going to have a brain cell that's been impressed with some information. If you don't think about it, if you just let that be, then you will have one single, it's called a precept, one single sense impression on a brain cell. And next week, should I hold it up again, we will resonate that brain cell and you will remember the past when you experienced it previously. Now, if I've got a big discussion going the second week and said, well, what is it? Then you're going to start to associate it with things that are already in brain cells. Well, it looks like, well, it could be, well, maybe we could do this with it, maybe, and everybody would have a different idea. If everybody shared their idea, another one of our receivers, the ear, along with the visual perceptor, as I'm holding this thing up, is going to take in this information. Well, it could be used to repair tires. It could be used to do this. It could be used for that. It could be. And all of a sudden, your file starts to get filled with information. You're building brain cells. Nobody guesses what it really is, so there's no accurate information in brain cells. But if I affirm to each of you, and you trust me, that your guess about it is the right guess, then each of you will go away knowing. Let's say I set it up so that you all give your opinions and you've all got an opinion, and then I say, okay, at the end of the class I'm going to communicate with each of you and let you know who was right. And on the way out the door I hand you each a piece of paper that says, your guess was right. Nobody knows what the other's got. Next week when I hold it up, each of you is going to come in convinced that the information that's been built in your brain cells, it's the right information, and that's what that thing is, and that's what it's used for. And it bears no resemblance to the truth necessarily. It's simply information in brain cells. And so that's the building process. What we're working with through the process of this class is building brain cells to look at the real world. You know, we've used our example several times of this two-dimensional creature that knows only width and length. And this two-dimensional creature, when we try to give him the experience of the basketball, builds brain cells. And he builds brain cells for this first line of experience, and that's the beginning of his experience of a basketball. And he goes through several different experiences, each one separate from the other. And he knows there's a beginning and he knows there's an end, so now there's time. Although when you and I experience a basketball, there's no time, is there? As long as we're stuck in this second two-dimensional world, we're going to see separate individual lines, right? Everybody get that idea of a flat plane with the basketball? So our experience is going to be limited. In a two-dimensional framework, you cannot experience a three-dimensional truth. You and I look at a basketball, we say there's no time, there's no separation, it just is a basketball, and it's right here, the whole thing, right now. But this guy down here, who's got brain cells for something different, says, no, that's not the way it is. It can't be that way. Remember that we are fourth-dimensional creatures. The body-mind unit is a three-dimensional instrument. You cannot experience the truth of the fourth dimension through a three-dimensional instrument any more than this guy can experience the wholeness of a basketball if he can only conceive of two planes. You know, they said the mind of man is not yet conceived. The mind of man is not yet dimensionally sound enough to experience the real truth about life. That's why you're not going to get it in words in this class. Don't believe a word I've got to say. None of it is the truth. However, what we can do if we can get this fellow on the two-dimensional plane to come to understand this, we can start seeing now, okay, it's going to take some faith here. It's going to take some trust. Because the minute I tell you that there aren't 100 different lines of experience in the basketball, in fact, it's all one, and there's no time, out of your experience, you're going to say, I'm insane. This two-dimensional creature is going to say, you are absolutely nuts to try to tell me that what I've experienced, that time, doesn't exist. How can that be? And he's right. Perhaps. And from his perspective, yes. It's going to take a lot of faith for him to say, okay, this doesn't make any sense to me, but I'll scratch time, I'll scratch beginnings, and I'll scratch ends, and I'll scratch my belief. Here we're talking about the forgiveness process. I'll cancel. I'll let go of. I'll scratch my belief in all of these separate planes. And I'll start to build, I'll let you show me, and I'll start to build a brain cell that says, this is all one unit. That a basketball does not have separate parts. It is not experienced in time, but it is one single unit. Now, we're in the same posture. We have built, as long as, you know, they said, don't let the world mold you, let the spirit mold you. The spirit is of the fourth dimension. The mind is of the third dimension. The world is of the third dimension. If we let the third dimensional world mold us, although our experience will be real, it will be valid and all of those things, it will not be the truth. And we're going to experience life, not as a whole, like the basketball is whole, but we're going to experience it in parts. Well, there was yesterday, because I experienced that first. And then, of course, there's today, because I'm experiencing now. And then there'll be tomorrow, because tomorrow I'll have a different experience. And our mind says there's time, and there's separateness, and there's separation. What the masters have tried to bring back and express in a three-dimensional language, something of a fourth-dimensional truth that can't be said in words, left us with a universal problem. Everybody's trying to understand it out of the words, and it can't be understood out of literal words. Because literal words cannot be built in the third dimension to represent a fourth dimensional truth. What we can do, however, is engage in the process of forgiveness. The process of forgiveness is the process of canceling each of our attachments, each of our attachments to the seeming truth of our experience. You know, if we look, we'll see many masters who came and said similar things. Many who went into another dimension of consciousness, went into another level. You say, in my father's house there are many mansions. There are many dimensions. Who knows? Maybe there are 5, 10, 20, 100, 1,000 more dimensions. I don't know. But we do know at this point that this separate separation and time leads to strife, needing to get, have, and war, death, the whole works. The wages of this error is death. So starting to let go of the things that have been built out of separateness. They are separate from me. I'll cancel that. I can hurt them without hurting myself. I'll cancel that. Learning to let go of those beliefs will give us the opportunity to erase the slate. What happens when we erase all of our attachments to the information and the past that the mind gives us? We've got an opportunity to put an end to the state of trance, to put an end to the state of hypnosis that the mind has held us in. And by doing that, we awaken to a new level of consciousness. We awaken to a new level of being. The fourth dimensional consciousness, which cannot be spoken of. By analogy, this is why parables were used. And you go back and they say of Christ, although everybody's trying to take his words literally, they say very clearly, he taught not without a parable. Why? Because he can't say in a three-dimensional language a fourth-dimensional truth. You can't tell what's really going on. You know, you look at, after he'd given a tremendous amount of teaching, one of his later statements to his disciples was, there's so many things I want to tell you yet, but you cannot bear them. So the objective of the spiritual teacher in the spiritual work was to give the student a chance to build the brain cells And in building the brain cells, come to understand that there is another way of looking at life. The best that we can hope for from the mind is that it will inform us there is another way of looking. The mind cannot contain the truth. It's like trying to put a bucket of water in a thimble. Doesn't work. Not big enough. Any more than the two-dimensional creature can understand the third dimension of a basketball. So here's a parable that gives us an opportunity to see that if we try to put it in the container can't hold it, and that we need to give up what the container has given us in order to get to the truth of life, in order to get to that other space. And that this mind, once it's got information built into it, these vibratory energies built into it, the mental and emotional energies are very coarse energies. What was it we were supposed to be listening for, though? The still, small voice. Not the coarse energies of the mind, not the emotional manipulations of the mind, but to get to spiritual awareness where we could hear the subtle voice on the spiritual plane. Now, if this thing is screaming its information, are we ever going to hear the subtle voice? No. That's where the workbook comes in. The workbook, and you've got to pick that book up, and you've got to do the exercises if you want real change. The workbook gives you an opportunity to start to build the brain cells that say there's another way, and to dismantle the brain cells that want to keep us locked into negative perceptions. There's a very simple test to find out whether or not your perceptions in life are accurate. If there's any pain, lack, negativity, or limitation, they are in error. They are not of the real world any more than the guy who believes in the separateness of the basketball, the guy who's on the two-dimensional plane, believes in the separateness of the basketball, that anything he believes about it is true, even though it's his experience. So this is what was meant by be transformed by the renewal of your mind. The exercises, day by day, week by week, are the tool for going in and renewing the mind. Not so that it can tell you the truth, because the truth can only be experienced in being. It cannot be experienced in getting information or having something. It's in being who you are. And that's an experience that comes out of spiritual essence, not out of mental or emotional awareness, not out of intellect. So the exercises give you the opportunity to dismantle the ravings of the mind. Remember John the Baptist was the raving maniac in the desert? You go back and look at the Jews, and they did what? They spent 40 years wandering in the desert. Do you remember what had to happen before they could enter into the Promised Land? The old generation had to die off. What does that mean? All of the old meanings that came from the old generation, the old meanings that are burying you, those dead who are burying you, must die off. We're talking about them having to die off in your own consciousness, having to eliminate these old beliefs that keep you buried from the mind. Now, when we got to the New Testament, the Christ was to come. There were going to be two visitations. One was an external, one was a personal. There was a forerunner. Who was the forerunner to the Christ? John the Baptist. What did they call him? The raving maniac in the desert. Do you see the connection? John was the one. If your Christ self, okay, what was it? The Christ in you, the same mind as Christ in you, the hope of glory. The Christ was the soul level, your soul, your spiritual level of awareness opening and starting to function from that level, not from the mind.
Now, before the Christ could arrive, what did you have to have? You had to have John the Baptist, the raving maniac in the desert, the one who reached into your desert. The desert is the body-mind unit, where there's all that misinformation, all that experience out of separateness that's not true, that has to be dismantled. So John the Baptist comes along, and he's the one who's able to reach in and bring that up for you. Now, there was a time where dear old John hadn't quite gotten his act together, and he lost his head for bringing up people's stuff. In this case, the king and queen didn't like what happened. So all of the stuff that he was able to bring up for them, they projected on him and took off his head for it. You know, you may find yourself being John the Baptist for some people. One of the skills to be acquired is knowing when to duck. I'm very serious with that. Because as you start to teach this work, and each of you will, you got to know when to duck. You got to know when to hold up the mirror to reflect it back and say, oh, wait a minute. You're upset, right? If you're in pain, you're in error. You've got something to heal. Your pain is not mine. Yes, I may be the one who brought it up for you, but if you ever want the personal visitation of the Christ, you must meet John the Baptist, who's going to bring it up and give you a chance to heal every limitation. See, the external coming of the Christ, seeing one who functioned out of a fourth dimensional consciousness, which is what? An awareness that we're all one. Do this to the least of my brethren and you've done it to me is a statement of oneness. Coming out of a level of consciousness that knows that love is the glue of the universe and that doesn't use love to go and murder people or condemn or criticize or send them to hell, but simply uses it to support them is coming from Christ consciousness. Now you go back 2,000 years and you look at how violent that society was. Go back several thousand years before that. And you find Moses is so frustrated with the mess that they've made and how violent they are that he gives the law and he says, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. He put a limitation on the amount of retribution that one could take against another. In other words, you can't do any more than they do to you. You can't go and kill off a whole generation just because somebody offended you. You can offend them in the same way they offended you. And so Moses was moving people toward another level of consciousness, out of the lower dimension, out of the limited perception, into a greater perception. And as we entered into that greater perception, what happened? We met our John the Baptist. You took responsibility for what came up. You took responsibility for all pain and all negativity. And you awaken. The personal experience of the Christ, the second coming, which was a personal coming, was the awakening of your own Christ self. The first coming of Christ was to build the brain cells so that the mind could advise you when you got into your violence and into your negativity and into wanting to project it on somebody else that it was yours. The mind could advise you, hey, if you're the one that's disturbed and upset, you're the one who's in error. Let's start to look for your errors and repair them instead of trying to obliterate somebody else for their errors. When Christ talked about that, he said, take the beam out of your own eye before you try and take a speck out of your brother's. In other words, if there's something that you are very disturbed and very upset about, no matter who's involved, it's your disturbance, it's your upset, and it's your opportunity to heal it. Pull the beam out of your eye so you can see it. The mind can become an advisor that tells us that. Although, in our normal human consciousness, we totally block out that we've ever made a mistake. It's all the rest of the world. Give yourself the opportunity to start to see that if you're in pain, you're in error. Take responsibility for it. And then a new level of awareness starts to manifest. The mind becomes the advisor that says, hey, even though I'm not big enough to tell you the truth, there's another way to look at this. And so now the mind goes back to its servant status. The mind
which was called the carnal mind, or Satan. You go back and listen to Christ when he talked about dying, and Peter said, "We'll save you." And his reply was what? "Get behind me, Satan. For you think in the mind of man rather than the plan of God." Exact definition of Satan, the mind of man. The limited consciousness comparable to this two-dimensional creature that has a limited awareness and tries to tell us the truth about something, a third-dimensional object that it cannot even conceive of. There's why there was no private interpretation of scriptures allowed. There's why you couldn't go to somebody else for interpretation, because all they could do was give you what was in their minds, and their minds cannot contain the truth, therefore they could not give you the truth. But if you open to your personal Christ self in that awakening, in that moment, in that instant, you experience being. And in your experience of being came the awareness and the knowledge of what life was really about, of what oneness was really about, of what fourth dimensional connection was really about. And that each master came to give us an opportunity to do our own work, not to stand around and admire theirs. You know, you look at Christ, and when they got too hooked into what he was doing, what did he say? "As long as I'm here, the Spirit cannot visit you." In other words, you're so focused out here, third dimensionally, that the fourth dimensional Spirit within you, the one that is connected with all, the one that has been given to you to show you the truth, you will not attune to, because you're focused out here on me, so I'm going to leave, so the Spirit can come to you. You see, imagine this two-dimensional creature focused on another two-dimensional creature over here, thinking this two-dimensional creature's got all the answers. Can this two-dimensional creature ever give him the answers? No. Impossible. Because it cannot be communicated in a two-dimensional framework. Yet, this one may be able to help to create the space for this one to go here to experience. But to stand around and admire his experience is not the objective. To stand around and admire someone else's personal experience is not the objective. To garner a personal experience of that personal experience was the objective. When Jesus said, "If I come in my own name, you would accept me, or you would accept another who comes in his name. But I come in the name of the one who sent me." Everybody wants to relate to somebody just like them, another name. And they want to deify that one and make him something special and admire his connection rather than doing the work of developing their own. But we're here to work toward developing your own and not admiring someone else's. Yes, admire someone else's and the support and the assistance it can give you, but develop your own. Because there is no embodiment in man that is any greater a son of God than you are. There never has been, there never will be. Now, of course, to some people that would be blasphemy. How could I possibly think something like that? Of course. Well, if Jesus was the ultimate and only embodiment of God, why did some of the other scripture compilers refer to him as the firstborn of many brethren? Why did he himself say, "The things I do, you can do, and even greater"? If he was the ultimate embodiment of God, of course no other being in flesh could ever do greater things than he, could they? But what does the human personality want to do? In order to avoid doing its own work, let's deify that one and pretend all we have to do is praise. So we need to stay with the personal experience of the personal experience to move toward that in developing our own connection. And then experiencing that connection out of being, not having to get information, not having to have something, not having to have power or control or money, Not that any of those things are bad. They're all there to help us to experience being. But go to the real realm of experience of being. Awaken to who you are. Awaken to the fact that you can do those things and greater. That's pretty incredible. You know, you stop and think about raising the dead, healing the sick, multiplying loaves and fishes, changing water into wine. That's pretty amazing stuff. Now, that all sounds very miraculous and magic, but it's not. All of that stuff is physical, third-dimensional material. And it's in a state of organization. It takes a consciousness to organize it. When we recognize that that consciousness comes from us and expresses through us, then we can start to organize our consciousness to literally be in harmony with changing any effect out there that happens in matter, any state of organization that happens in matter. You can literally bring about a transmutation and a change in it, your own and others. Because truly, there is only one power. And truly, each of us was invited to the feast. That parable of the feast was an expression of, look, you guys, here's what you're capable of having. And you're so busy, you want to go off and take care of your cows or take care of your business or do this or do that. What kind of excuses have you got for turning down the ultimate conscious co-creation with God? Why do you do that? Why do you settle yourself in such poverty when you are capable of so much more? Of course, the mind that had all the brain cells built about, well, I'm a sinner, and I'm not worthy of, etc., 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 denies that that parable of the feast could be for him. Oh, no, I would never be invited to the feast. I mean, if somebody would split me in the servants' quarters in the back door, I'd be very happy because, of course, I don't deserve any more than that. Go back to the brain cells that were built. Where did they come from? Those kind of brain cells were never built by the Holy Spirit. Those kind of brain cells came from man. Those kind of brain cells came from insecurity and fear and separateness and ego-centeredness. Time to undo that. It's time for forgiveness. It's time to go in and cancel those limitations and be who we are and express who we are, children of God. You go back and the statement is made in the beginning of Genesis, let there be light. The word that's used there for light is the same word that Jesus used when he said, I am the light of the world. And it's an identical context and an identical word that was used when he said, you are the light of the world. Why does the ego want to go on claiming its poverty, its negativity, its limitations? Why do we hang with the past, the way the world has molded us? It's time to get to work and undo that past. Any form of pain means you're not living in God's world because God's world doesn't include any of that. And as soon as we came into awareness through brain cells and took the programming of the world, that's when we left the Garden of Eden. That's when we left the state of consciousness that was called inner peace, where the only voice that could be heard was the voice for God. And when we will silence the brain cells by doing the work, that means on day one you do lesson one, on day two you do lesson two, and day three you do lesson three, etc., etc., through that whole workbook. And when you get to 365, you start at one again, and you restructure that whole thing until finally it's a support, where instead of feeding you its negativity and its past limitation, it says, oh, I remember when there was negativity and limitation, and I know it's not true anymore. And I can support you being who you are. I can support you being the spiritual essence that you are. I can assist you to coming to a personal experience of your divine connection. And out of that will come all abundance. Was it seek first the kingdom of God? Of course, the ego is already determined it's unachievable, so you might as well not bother, just hang around and be a sinner. Why do you think we were told, seek first the kingdom of God?
Obviously, it was practical and it could be done, but you have to do it. Faith alone isn't enough. It takes works. The faith is what is going to take this two-dimensional creature into an experience of this, but only if he does the work of letting go of all the junk. It's going to take some real faith to make that leap from what it knows from its own experience to be true, what it knows of limitation. It's going to take some real work to step out of that and step into a new level, into a new expression. That's the work part. And each of us has to do the work to develop our own experience of being. Seek first the kingdom of God and all other things will be made unto you. That wasn't religious. That was practical. Here's where you live. Because where your consciousness is focused is what your life looks like. As a man thinketh in his heart, so it will be. If life is giving you negative feedback, it's because that's where your heart is. Learn to cancel your attachment to that level. The word repent, so many, the ego's interpretation of repent is, well, you know, that's bad, and I did it, and look how terrible I am. That's not repentance. Repentance has nothing whatsoever to do with the negativity. In the context it was originally used in Aramaic, it didn't mean turn away from the negativity. It meant turn toward and embrace the greater. Turn toward and embrace the kingdom of God, the kingdom of all potential. Nothing religious in that statement. A simple statement about where you live. And this is one of the other tricks of the mind, as long as we keep hanging around with the negativities, then the negativities will keep us cycling in them. Because our awareness is focused there, as much as we resist them, what happens? We create more of them. What was the statement of resist not evil about? Resist not evil was a statement of, listen, you are a creative being. Whatever you focus on, you create. If you stay focused on the negativity and what you don't want, if you keep resisting it, you've given it all of your focus, you've given it all of your power, there it is in front of you. What's the answer to it? Repent. Turn toward and embrace the kingdom. The place where harmony, support, love, and safety is. The world will offer no safety. Until you go into that true world and clean it up. Until we go into our own inner world, into what was called the kingdom of God. And that the support and the assistance for doing that would become available. And we asked for it. Shortcut to enlightenment. Ask for it. Shortcut to being in a kingdom. Ask for it and then accept it. If your acceptor isn't working very well, then develop it. Learn to let it open, to receive it. Because the creative power has never withheld it. The creative power has always been there, willing to hand it to you whenever you want. 1,000 promises of what would be there when you made the decision to turn toward and embrace. But what does the ego want to do? Oh, it's a lot better to keep control of people and keep them in line, to give them all the negativity and give them all the sin and give them all the pain and give them all the condemnation and resist all that stuff and know you got to stop it, but keep it going because you're focused on it. We're in a new day. It's time to awaken to the truth of our creative essence. And as we do that, move into expressing from that essence. Move into developing our personal connection. It's not someone else's personal experience of God we're looking for. It's a reconnection. It's a remembering of our own. Building the brain cells here is not going to bring it to completion. Building the brain cells is not enough. We've got to go beyond building the brain cells. You know, the item that I held up earlier in the class, you know what it was?
It was from Rome back around the year 2000, minus 2000, okay, 2000 BC. And it was a handy-dandy chariot repair kit. Now you know what it was. Now the brain cells have been filmed. If the ego gets a hold of that, it'll run off saying, now I know what it is and all of that.
But do you know what it's about? Do you know how to use it?
I can tell you a lot about it, and I can build a lot of brain cells. But until you take that thing and you go out and repair your chariot with it, you're not going to know how it really works. Right? I mean, you're not going to have a first-hand experience of how it really works any more than I can tell you all about riding bicycles for the next 10 years. Until you get on one, you're not going to know the exhilaration and the experience of being on a bicycle. So you can sit and you can listen to all of this stuff about forgiveness for the next 10 years unless you put it to work in your life. Once the brain cells are built, that's just the start of it. The ego wants to go around and say, oh, I know all of it now. So what have you done with it? You've got to put it to work. You've got to bring it into function in your life. That's what's going to build experience out of the soul level and the brain cells on the mental level to finally come to understand it. And that's what we're looking to do. Create a space. Create a support system that really, truly breaks each one personally through to doing the work. Rather than sitting around talking about it and arguing about it and deciding who knows which scripture says this and which scripture says that. There are all kinds of scriptures for anything you want. There's scriptures that tell you you're a sinner. There's scriptures that tell you you're the Son of God. There's scriptures that tell you you're going to hell. There's scriptures that say no matter what happens, you'll be saved. It's all there because that book was so beautifully written to appeal to every mind so that every mind could climb the ladder to the highest truth. But it had to start out by holding out what that mind experienced and what that mind understood. Otherwise, there would be no resonance. There would be no attraction to it. So yes, there's a lot of lower level stuff. And as long as you need to hang out with that, hang out with it. But that wasn't the objective of the book. You know, there are a lot of people going around with, you know, they're beating up on them for condemning and for doing this and their sins, etc., etc., etc. Go back to Christ, and what did he say his purpose was? I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. Do we need any more than that? I come to bring you a connection with the Father that is yours. I come to... The purpose of this class is to build the brain cells so that your mind, through all of its mire and all of its muck and all of its limitation, the carnal mind, will finally one day get that vibration strong enough in brain cells that when you're tempted to go the route of limitation, the mind says, wait a minute, there's another way. Wait a minute, we don't have to react out of separateness and violence. Wait a minute, if I try to inflict pain, physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual on another being, the first being that gets hit with it is me, even though I've suppressed my awareness of it. Think about that person you've had the most conflicts with. What thoughts have you been thinking about them? Those thoughts are going into your energy field first. It's only healing those thoughts that will change the experience. Because as long as you hold those thoughts, you're going to create time after time after time where you'll say, why is this happening to me again? Because the experience that is in brain cells is our asking. We've got to learn how we've asked, undo our previous asking, and connect with being. That's your prerogative. That's your heritage. That's the requirement. And then the real promise of this work is not just that you will heal yourself and you'll feel better about everything and it'll be great. It's that that energy, that when that awareness is sown into your brain cells, enough people incarnate that
enough people get connected with that, and it will permeate the whole of humankind. It was said scripturally, a little leavening will go a long way. The story of the 100 monkeys. We're working toward getting the 100th monkey right now. You might be it, I don't know. But in the story of the 100 monkeys, if you haven't heard it, the South Pacific scientists are feeding the monkeys sweet potatoes. There's one peculiar female monkey who won't eat her sweet potato until she's taken it to the ocean and washed it. Over a period of time, she starts to train other monkeys. At the point where she had trained approximately 100 monkeys, that is, every day approximately 100 monkeys were going to the ocean and washing their sweet potato before they'd eat it. At that point, that day, every monkey on the island did it. And not only the monkeys on that island, but surrounding islands, it started to happen. Why? Because a new idea, a new vibration had been built in brain cells, and that became the leavening. When it was reinforced, when the true spiritual teaching is reinforced in enough minds, it will create a vibratory energy, an energy field that will permeate all of humankind. And the violent ones won't have to be taught. They won't have to learn forgiveness. The energy will just clean it out. You won't have to go and change everybody. I suspect when it was said by Christ, my teaching will permeate the globe, will touch every corner of civilization. He wasn't talking about there'd be people with bodies who get up and physically walk to New Guinea and physically fly into this country and that country and this part of the jungle and that part of the jungle and this little corner. What was meant was when this understanding, when this new higher understanding that has as its prerequisite, love thy neighbor as thyself, love God with thy whole body, mind, soul, and spirit. And that those three commandments, love God, neighbor, and self, hang, on those hang the law and all the prophets. We wouldn't have people who would go out with violence against neighbor, God, or self. That we would have those who would heal that part of themselves and therefore would come to understand the law and the prophets. As long as the mind is darkened, the glass is darkened, the computer is muddled up with negativity, with resentments toward one person, yourself or anyone else, then your glass is darkened. The law and the prophets will not make sense. If you harbor one grievance against one other being, you cannot understand the law and the prophets. If you harbor grievance against one other being and you're not willing to let go of it, if you harbor condemnation toward one other being and you're not willing to let go of it, if you harbor judgment against one other being, if you, in your ego, justify that judgment is necessary, although you were told, judge not lest you be judged, then you don't have a clue what the law and the prophets mean. I don't care how educated you are. I don't care how much information has been put into brain cells. We must first fulfill that which the law and the prophets hang on. Love of God, neighbor, and self. Dig up the harbored resentments. Dig up the harbored negativity and heal it. And all of a sudden there won't be any need to condemn anyone. And the higher aspect of the law will be incarnated on the planet, and we will automatically have a planet that lives in peace. I suspect when it was said the 144,000 would be lifted up, that what was really meant was not that, you know, somebody was going to come and scoop up 144,000 people and then kill everybody else that they didn't like, but that there would be a core number, there would be a number of people approximating that 144,000. That 144,000 is symbolic of that. Who would come to the higher level of truly doing the work. Not talking about it, but truly doing the work. And then when that happened, the vibration, the energy, would become the leavening that would leaven the whole loaf of humanity. And we'd have a true transformation. Your vote in that is important. Your willingness to do the work is important. Because if we don't, this planet's in a lot of trouble. It can change very quickly. It can change by the law of mathematical progression. It doesn't have to be one-to-one. It's not a matter of having to go out and proselytize. It's a matter of going in and doing your own work. It's that simple. That's the greatest contribution you can make to humanity right now. Is take responsibility for every resentment, for every grudge, for every limited thought, for every negative thought, and heal it in yourself. And as you heal it, a transformation will take place, not only in your own life, not only in your own relationships, but in the whole planet. If in the past you've been prone to being connected with the negative aspect, with the negativity, then know that you're contributing to the pool of negative energy on the planet, and there will be instruments who will resonate with that and express violence and negativity. Expressing violence toward them isn't going to change that. Healing your own violence will. And I invite you to do that. Really, truly do that. That's the purpose of being on planet Earth right now in the body. That's what we're here to learn. And then we'll start to get some insight into what life is really about, into what the mind of man is not yet conceived. And the servant will go back to servant status, the mind, the emotions, the body. They will truly be the proper servant they were meant to be, as opposed to being the master that enslaves us. Enslavement in any form darkens the glass. We need to let go of all of our enslavement and incarnate the true spiritual being that we are. You are divine. Express your divinity everywhere, to everything, and it will permeate everywhere, permeate everything, and heal the planet. We experience our lives as separate and separated, past, present, and future. Those are a product of a consciousness that's got a limited view and can't see the whole thing at once. So we're coming to the point where, and the first stage, and when you hear it, you know, you get an insight into it, and it goes, oh, yeah, wow, that's great. I've got it. I'm going to do it right now. Of course, the mind is still totally programmed with the past, right? With all of its experiences of separateness and separation. It cannot conceive of that. This was called storming the gate. When you started to see the possibility and potential of it, and you want to be there right now without doing the work. This is what ends up becoming dogma. If here's somebody who spent, you know, 50 years in separateness and separation, and all of a sudden gets an insight into the oneness, well, no, I don't want to do the work of that. I just want to be in the oneness. And boy, if you won't let me, I'll kill you. You know, if you step in my way, if you bring me negative experience, all the while forgetting that the only place you can experience negativity is out of your own store. You know, as they said to Jesus when he was being condemned by the Pharisees, and they said, you know, why don't you give it to him? Why don't you do the same to him? He says, I have none of that in my store. He did not experience the negativity that his disciples experienced because he cleared the negativity out of his store. This is the first stage. Then we can go on into, you know, the greater things. You know, obviously when Jesus said, the things I do, you can do, and even greater, he was indicating as he said that he expected to do greater things himself. He had basically done the work of cleaning out his store, and was ready to go on to the next level of his experience, which obviously was not physical at that time. And so he went on and did that and said, follow me. Clean out your store, do your inner work, and then you will be able to start to move to the next level of experience into what it's really about. Because, you know, as with the basketball, all the stories that have been made up and all the experiences that have been had of that separateness and separation of the basketball isn't going to lead us to the truth of what a whole one-piece basketball is. I don't care how much you work out on the physical plane out of your separateness, it's not going to give you an experience of the oneness until you clean out your store of the belief in separateness and start to connect with the oneness. Of the belief in, yes, well, of course, there are certain beings that you must mistrust. The only being you can mistrust is yourself, because there's nobody else. We're all connected. If we could but alter our eyes for an instant to the higher vibratory plane, what you would find is that there's an energy that connects us all. We're not separate or separated at all, not in the least. And as you can let go of the part of you that believes in the other, and notice that the more you've got invested in it, the more difficult it's going to be to let go of. You know, if you've got 50 years invested in all that negativity, and all of a sudden somebody comes along and says there's another way to do it, especially if they say, and all that negativity is right there in your own store, what are you going to do? You're going to want to take off his head. Okay? He's John the Baptist. And you're going to run into that. You're going to run into it from both sides, where you're going to want to take off somebody's head for bringing up your negativity. If there's any negative experience, it's yours. It doesn't belong to anybody else. Say, well, gee, I can name 37 people I had this negative experience with. Right. There was one common factor, wasn't there? Who was it? You think all 37 people were the same and you're the one who's different, but you keep getting it thrown at you? I mean, you can even go home and lay in your bed at night and there isn't anybody else there and you still experience it. Whose experience is it? It's yours. That's a tough one. What's the answer to that one? Willingness. Just be willing. Don't, you know, the ego, when it hears this and says, okay, now we're going to change it all, and tomorrow when you're not perfect, what do? You condemn yourself because you haven't got it all together yet. You can't storm the gates. You've got to have patience, and it takes time. Have some willingness. Have some patience with yourself. Give yourself some space. And it will unfold. But it takes time to unfold. Willingness is a big key. The willingness to be with your experience now, no matter what it is, with an eye toward undoing it so that you can get to the point where you will be able to conceive of the truth of life and of what lies in store. That's what we're here to do. To experience the truth of life. The real beauty that was given to us with the garden when we were first put in it, and the ability to enter back into the garden and live there, even though the rest of humanity may not be there yet. The rest of humanity values many other things. That's fine. Don't resist their valuing it. Simply choose to value what you value. The pearl of great price. Once you get a glimpse into that, there's nothing external, physical, that has any value. This is the pearl of great price. Sell everything to get it. In other words, put your energy into it.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.